Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that considers the annual Academy Awards event its version of the Super Bowl, even if few Oscar broadcasts can match the drama of Kansas City's comeback victory over the San Francisco 49ers. And that even includes the infamous La La Land moonlight blunder. We're going to preview Sunday's broadcast, the red carpet coverage of which will begin at 3:30 p.m. on KXLY-TV. But first, we're going to talk about an intriguing Netflix documentary called Miss Americana, which gives a view of singer-songwriter Taylor Swift that makes the world of celebrity fame look a whole lot less fun than the entertainment media would like us to think. So let's begin by stepping into the shoes of someone who, at the tender age of 30, has already won 10 Grammy Awards. That someone happens to be Taylor Allison Swift, who was just 16 when her first album, Taylor Swift, was released. And what a start to career that was, the LP topping the country album chart for 24 weeks and achieving platinum status times 7 in the U.S. and gold in the United Kingdom. Since then, the world has watched Swift grow up, release one award-winning album after the next, date a succession of boys and men, and in the process, grace the headlines of every gossip rag in existence while attracting the envy, and almost as often, enmity, of every talking head TV and social media commentator in existence. Miss Americana, a Netflix documentary directed by Lana Wilson, starts out as a standard celebrity profile, something similar to film profiles of such entertainers as Madonna, Beyonce, and Lady Gaga, as it follows Swift's successful rise. But pretty soon, it evolves into something more serious, an examination of fame itself and of how that fame can elevate your career, even as it eats at your very soul.
I might not be the person to be the first to speak about this particular film because actually, I'm not that familiar with Taylor Swift. What I know about
although
Taylor
our granddaughter
Swift, that's what
loves
I was
going to
say,
Taylor
comes
Swift.
Via our 11-year-old granddaughter, who is a huge fangirl, and actually has started writing song lyrics as a result of Taylor's path to fame, maybe. But I don't think it's about the fame. I think it's about expressing yourself. And that's, in the end, I believe, where this documentary ends up. Because, you know, we see everything that goes along with the accoutrements of fame in Taylor Swift's life, most of it looks pretty horrific, actually. The travel, the pressures, the
coming out the front door and having a jillion people standing
yeah,
there.
Yeah, she says, this is my front yard.
Yes.
I know,
yeah.
I know. And but we do see, you know, her relationship with her mom, and her mom, you know, has had cancer for many years, but she's her strongest support system. We see sort of the backstory about her making the music, which I thought was really interesting in terms of not really knowing too much about that. I think that, I mean, Nathan, of course, since you're the music guy, I expect you'll weigh in more on the music aspects of this. But I, too, Dan, was impressed by the fact that, you know, she had this epiphanous experience, decided that she needed to get involved in things that were happening in Tennessee, her home state. And she was particularly inspired by the senatorial race there in 2018. So I liked that sort of segue because the movie does take a different turn. We are missing some of the Taylor Swift things for better or for worse. We don't really learn a whole lot about her course of dealing with other people in the music community or even with this whole posse of celebrity young women who she used to hang out with. We also don't see some of her spectacular residences like her amazing house that she bought Watch Hill, Rhode Island, which
we had to drive past
several times
because
when
of
we were
our
vacationing
granddaughter,
there
yes.
so that our granddaughter could possibly get
Can't
a glimpse.
Can't we go inside? No.
I was also intrigued by the fact that this film did focus on the trial that took place in Denver. There was a lawsuit about a DJ who had groped Taylor Swift during a photo. So in Miss Americana, it really does run the gamut of looking at the sort of good, the bad, and the ugly about what has happened to Taylor over time. But I think those events, her own experience in the so-called Me Too situation, and her concern about her state, her concern about other people, does galvanize her to become more politically active. And that's kind of unexpected. I didn't think that it was really going to go in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what the whole second half of Miss Americana is really about, is this sort of, quote, unquote, awakening of Taylor Swift, which some see as a calculation. And, I mean, I think her career, as is the case with any giant megastar, is full of calculations. It's when do you make that pivot from country into pop? When do you release the next
album?
And
they didn't really focus on that.
Not so much.
It looked like it was more of a smooth transition.
Yeah, and the first half of the movie is sort of this rush of media coverage, really. I mean, that's kind of what it is. And then it sort of settles down and becomes more about –
And they did talk about her being Dixie chick,
yeah,
potentially.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. And so there is kind of this expectation, especially within the realm of country music, where, you know, you don't want to alienate anybody. And, you know, the Dixie chicks do come up. And I don't think coincidentally the Dixie chicks are actually on Taylor Swift's most recent album, which is called Lover, which we see her making in this movie. And I think, as is the case with any kind of celebrity sanctioned behind the scenes documentary, you sort of have to come at this sort of thing with a little bit of skepticism, mm-hmm. because Taylor Swift has been, even though her music is about her life and even though she has been under scrutiny, she's a relatively private person. I mean, she doesn't do a lot of interviews where she's talking about her personal life. We just, you know, speculate about it wildly.
And even now, she's kept her current relationship with the actor Joe Alwyn and sort of under wraps.
Yeah.
I mean, he does appear briefly in the
background.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching Miss Americana and I'm thinking, how much of this can I take seriously? How much of this is rehearsed? And I was thinking of Beyoncé's Homecoming, another kind of behind the scenes documentary about a famously private artist, or even something like, going back, you mentioned Madonna in the intro, but Truth or Dare, which is a similar kind of thing where there's stuff that's kind of made up for the camera and actual moments of great nonfiction storytelling. But I think that what this movie has to say about the music industry specifically and about how we look at artists and how we think about them and even consider them as tastemakers or as, you know, political voices, I think it actually has something pretty powerful to say. And I think a lot of it comes from Taylor Swift personally. She kind of has this salvo at the end of the movie where she talks about how women are under this microscope that men are not, how she's expected to keep reinventing herself, basically putting in all this effort while making it seem effortless, even though, of course, the best pop music is labored over. And I also liked the footage here of her in the recording studio. And we actually see these songs that we can now listen to, sort of see them coming into being.
Yeah. The other thing about this, I too watched this movie with a lot of skepticism, as I do almost any film. But to me, Miss Americana is all about the notion of her trying to retain a sense of humanity while being involved in a world that is that none of us can really understand. I mean, it's insane. And
I mean, she didn't even have, seems to still be trying to understand it herself.
Sure, exactly, yeah. Because she was 16 when she began. It's been 40. Her basically, your professional career has modeled this same thing. Can you imagine having this kind of access?
I also think it's interesting that we're reviewing Miss Americana right after the Super Bowl performances of the Super Bowl halftime performances of J-Lo and Jennifer Lopez and Shakira, because that has gotten so much attention, mm-hmm. You know, and so much scrutiny about them and their bodies and, you know, everything. And so
how sexualized it was mm-hmm. or was
right,
not.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this is a nice counterpart to some of that, because you can see she goes through some of these same eating disorder type mm-hmm. of comments and concerns in this particular film. There's nothing about her ongoing feud or litigation with Scooter Braun.
Right. The record producer who, we should give a little background,
yeah.
who essentially stole the rights of her music away from her.
When she was a teenager.
Yeah, and so she's been fighting to retain them.
Right.
Them
and
back.
So I think that certainly is a huge mm-hmm. commentary on the music industry and exploitation.
Yeah.
And we've seen that in other contexts. But to see that it's still happening in that same way with juvenile artists, I think is really disconcerting.
You know, I mean, the ultimate thing about Miss Americana is that you could look at it and say, oh, it's another story about, oh, woe is me. You know, I'm so famous, it's horrible.
It's so but hard to be a superstar.
Exactly.
But it is.
I kept waiting for the movie to kind of go into that territory, and it doesn't. It holds back just enough. So you can call that calculated if you want, and maybe it is. But at the same time, She didn't have to do any of this stuff. She could have made just a pop star, isn't it great to be me kind of movie, and her fans would have gone to it. They would have paid to see it, but she didn't. She chose to do something more serious,
yeah.
And I applaud her for that. And that was the Taylor Swift documentary, Miss Americana. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to preview Sunday's Academy Awards broadcast. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss the Netflix Taylor Swift documentary, Miss Americana. Let's now move to Hollywood's annual orgy of self-congratulations, the Academy Awards broadcast. Television coverage of the red carpet arrival of the stars, which is what Mary Pat is typically especially interested in, is scheduled to begin at 3:30 Pacific time in Spokane on KXLY TV Channel 4. The show, once again, will have no single host. As for the awards themselves, this year, more than ever, the winners in the top category should offer viewers few real surprises. Don't you think, Nathan?
Well, yeah, and that's kind of how it's becoming, because the Academy Awards are the last big movie award show of the season. I mean, we've already had the
That's
Golden
what it's
Globes,
become, yeah, yeah.
And the BAFTAs and the Screen Actors Guild Awards and the
Directors Guild Awards. Producer Guild,
so I think a lot of the main categories are pretty much set in stone. But there's always the possibility of a surprise. And, I mean, I think we should just
Moonlight
start
over La La Land.
Well, that's a good recent example. I was thinking
that would be a good title.
yeah, it would. But I was thinking about the lead actress category last year, because everyone was certain that Glenn Close was going to win Best Actress for the movie The Wife. She had won pretty much every acting award before. It was her seventh Oscar nomination. Everyone thought, this is the time. And who took the award instead? Olivia Colman for The Favorite. And it was a shock, a great shock, and a totally deserved award, I think. So I want to start in this year's Best Actress category. And I'll just go through the nominees real quick. Cynthia Erivo for Harriet, Scarlett Johansson for Marriage Story, Saoirse Ronan for Little Women, Charlize Theron for Bombshell, and Renee Zellweger for Judy. And it seems like Renee Zellweger is really the favorite here. She's one of the two people in this category, Charlize Theron being the other, who's already won an Oscar, but it seems like she's going to kind of get it for this comeback for playing Judy Garland. And I have a sneaking suspicion that we're going to have a Glenn Close situation on our hands, because I can't.
Well, who would do it?
I that's the thing. I don't know. But
not
I just
Charlize
don't,
Theron.
No.
Not Charlize Theron. And I don't think Cynthia Erivo.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying that.
Erivo, sorry.
I think that it's a situation where I can't really think of people having that much of affection for Judy anyway. I mean, it's an okay movie. She's good in it. But I think it's a situation where nobody really saw The Wife, and so therefore it went to a movie more people had seen.
Right. So here's the deal, though. I think in this particular circumstance, if you look at the Academy and the composition of the Academy, I think there's going to be a lot of affinity for Judy Garland. And it's basically overall a nuance, but fairly good portrait of Judy and the troubles that she went through. So we eliminated Charlize Theron because I don't think she should have gotten a nomination in the first place. And I think that Cynthia Erivo, I really liked her performance. I'm not sure that the movie was, you know, it's an important movie,
right.
But I'm not sure that that would necessarily get people's attention, although we should mention that she is the only person of color who's nominated in any of the major acting categories.
So it's possible there's goodwill there. Maybe that could be a surprise. But it does seem like Zellweger is the solid bet.
I agree. Okay. Zellweger. How about actor?
Okay, so here are the nominees. Antonio Banderas for Pain and Glory, Leonardo DiCaprio for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, Joaquin Phoenix for Joker, Jonathan Pryce for The Two Popes. And this is Joaquin Phoenix's category to lose, I think.
Yeah, exactly. He won the Golden Globes, the BAFTA, the Screen Actors Guild, which, I mean, that just basically says give him the award now. But you know what? I just was not that impressed. And I really liked Adam Driver. I think this is Leonardo DiCaprio's best adult role in Once Upon a Time. I just watched that movie for the second time. He is superb. Antonio Banderas, an entire career, and he's a marvelous in that film.
That would be my choice for, you know, the alternative pick here, because Jonathan Pryce, although I ended up liking The Two Popes, I know Nathan not so much, I don't think that that's an award-winning performance. And the others, I think, kind of cancel each other out. So Antonio Banderas, I really do think that he's got a shot.
And it's one of those performances that it's insular, it's inward, which the Academy doesn't always go for. They like the big, flashy performances.
Right.
Although Jonathan Pryce's performance in The Two Popes isn't all that flashy either. I agree. I mean, I think Adam Driver, DiCaprio, and Banderas, I mean, those are three stellar performances.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that Joaquin Phoenix, who I think should have won the Oscar for The Master a few years ago, he'll probably take it, I think.
Probably.
That's a safe
All right,
bet.
Actress in a supporting role.
Okay, we've got Kathy Bates in Richard Jewell, Laura Dern in Marriage Story, Scarlett Johansson again in Jojo Rabbit, Florence Pugh in Little Women, and Margot Robbie in Bombshell. And, I mean, Laura Dern has been taking home awards left and right for this movie,
everything.
So she'll probably take the Oscar, too.
Right.
Yeah, and I would feel okay about that.
Sure,
The only problem here was I don't understand the Margot Robbie nomination at all.
No,
I don't either.
J-Lo, Jennifer
Absolutely.
Lopez should have gotten a nomination in this category.
Right,
and so maybe I just was not a huge fan of Bombshell because now I've dissed both of the actresses
who
were nominated.
I'm right there with you.
Say that I love Kathy Bates in Richard Jewell as much as I've ever liked her in anything. She was terrific in this film.
She was. I mean, and I think that nomination is more because she's Kathy Bates than because it's truly
right,
an Oscar-worthy performance.
Actually, I liked his performance.
Yeah, Paul Walter Hauser.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
And he didn't
get nominated.
And the other person in the actor category, I really thought Jamie Foxx was tremendous in Just Mercy.
Yes,
yes he was.
I think that he sort of got robbed of a nomination.
So, but if you had to vote in this category in Best Supporting Actor, who would you pick?
Yeah,
I'd
pick Laura Dern.
See, I'd go with Florence Pugh. I thought she was
really? I thought she was,
she was
really good,
terrific
too.
In Little
she
Women.
Was,
she had such a good year in 2019.
Yeah, I know, but I really liked her in Midsommar.
I liked her in Midsommar. Summer
I
too, but
I mean,
I think as Amy in Little Women, she's maybe the true star of that.
No,
movie.
She
as
stole
good as
every
Saoirse Ronan.
She stole
she
every scene
I
she
agree.
Was in.
Great,
okay. Actor
so
in a supporting role.
Last category here, we've got Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Anthony Hopkins in The Two Popes, Al Pacino and Joe Pesci for The Irishman, and Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And I think this is another sure bet. If Brad Pitt doesn't win this, it's going to be a shock. This is the
absolutely.
First award they hand out. In the night.
Yeah.
So that would be crazy.
They're going to want to give it to him just simply because he's going to give the best speech. I mean, he's been giving great speeches all along.
These speeches with these jokes that somebody wrote for him. I don't
Absolutely.
Know who his writers are, but
Absolutely.
He's got some zingers.
Well, Tom Hanks was really good. Anthony Hopkins was Anthony Hopkins. Pacino and Pesci are going to split votes. They were both really good in The Irishman, but it's Brad Pitt's to lose.
I agree.
I'd vote for Pesci, though.
He was good.
It was great to see
understated,
him again.
Like Kathy Bates was understated. He was understated.
I hope that this opens up opportunities for him to get more roles.
Totally. I agree. Okay, I think we got to go to the granddaddy category of them all, which is Best Picture. And we've got I think it's 9 nominees this year, which I know Dan always hates when they don't just round it up to 10.
I know. Go 10. Jeez, what is wrong with these people?
Okay, here are nominees. Ford v. Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite. And it seems to me that the field has kind of been narrowed down to two front runners. Which I would not have suspected a couple of months ago.
No.
But that's 1917 and Parasite, which Parasite is the first Korean film to be nominated for any Academy Award.
Right.
And here it is, a possible frontrunner for Best Picture. Like, that's awesome.
So, but it's been nominated in the foreign language film category.
Right, which has been renamed International Film.
Oh, okay. Yeah. International Films,
so,
yes.
Yeah, and no film has ever won both categories, so – I have a hard time believing that Parasite is going to break that. But, I mean, it's one of those movies.
It's won everything, though.
It has won everything. And it's one of those movies that everybody who has seen it seems to love it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's totally possible that the preferential balloting system where people don't vote for Best Picture, they number them all. They rank them.
Right.
It's totally possible that the goodwill towards Parasite could push it up there, even though 1917 – seems like the most Oscar-y movie of the bunch.
I would have no problem if that won. Although, come on, The Irishman, that is top three in Scorsese's career. It's one of the great films. It is a great film.
And isn't it crazy that when it came out around Thanksgiving, everyone was talking about it as this – you know, how can anyone contend with this? And now it seems like it's not going to win anything at all.
I know. That's fascinating. I would not be disappointed if Little Women won, especially after Greta Gerwig was overlooked in the director category.
Do you think she has a shot for winning for Best Adapted Screenplay?
Yeah, I do.
I think she does,
too. I do, yeah. Because, I mean, this is such an iconic book. And to take that was so audacious in some respects. And so I
do think that she has... Adapted screenplay, it won the BAFTA. I mean, Jojo Rabbit won the BAFTA and the Writers Guild of America. So
yeah, they don't always – the Academy doesn't always go with the Writers Guild, though. So of all of these nominations in any category, what's the one that you would be most excited to see win?
But what about
Oscar
Best
Night?
Director?
Well, I think Sam Mendes is going to win that.
Okay. Yeah. I think you're right.
I think that's a sure
which in a
thing.
In a field with Scorsese and Tarantino and – I don't know, but I think you're right. He's won pretty much everything.
Well, to answer the question I posited earlier.
Well, I would say – I just said Little Women.
Yeah.
If that won Best Picture, I'd be like ecstatic.
I'm going to say Parasite winning Best Picture. I think that would be thrilling and hopefully would open the door for more foreign language films. It seems that, you know, we don't get as many as we should in America. And one winning Best Picture would be great.
If Adam Driver won for Marriage Story, I would really love that.
That'd be great.
You know, he's had a big year too.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So –
he's Kylo Ren, after all.
He is Kylo Ren. Exactly.
So we might not have helped people fill out their Oscar ballots. But.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe we just, you know, we just got further into the weeds. But I doubt there will be many surprises, but you never know.
You never know. And that was our look at Sunday's Academy Awards broadcast. This is Movies 101, and I'm Dan Webster. Earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder and Murray Pat Truthart and I discussed the Taylor Swift Netflix documentary, Miss Americana. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again venture into the world of contemporary cinema. Until then, remember these words from the one and only Taylor Swift. To me, fearless is not the absence of fear. It's not being completely unafraid. To me, fearless is having fears. Fearless is having doubts, lots of them. To me, fearless is living in spite of those things that scare you to death. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.